If you're an athlete, you know the greatest motivator of all is the fear of letting your teammates down. After all, a team is only as good as its weakest link. So you owe it to those wearing the same jersey as you to be your best every time you step on the field. That's why there's no vape in team. When you vape, you can expose your lungs to toxic chemicals that can damage your lungs. If you're a step behind, the team's a step behind. Brought to you by The Real Cost and the FDA.
Oh yeah!
Welcome to the Completely Unnecessary Podcast for Tuesday, September 29th, 2020. That's Ian Ferguson.
I'm right here.
I'm Pat Contry. On the show today, we'll be discussing some retro gaming, some modern gaming topics, Amazon coming up with their own game streaming service, a review of the Console Wars documentary, Farmville shutting down, and whatever else we decide is worthy of your ears and eyes. Ian, how was your weekend? Oh, first, Ian, sorry. We got wares at ultimatenintendo.com. We got the Not For Resale Blu-ray that's there on Blu-ray. It's there on Blu-ray. It's also digitally available on iTunes, Google Play Store, Microsoft Store, Vimeo, wherever. It's everywhere except for Sony, because Sony hates us. Microsoft Store. It's everywhere, Ian. It's everywhere. And, of course, you can get the other enamel pins there as well. Sorry, I had to say that, Ian. Oh, I'm also on Cameo. Cameo.com/PatContry. All right, Ian, sorry. And there's flies coming around here that I'll get to.
Damn fly.
How was your weekend?
It's good. It's fine. I worked. Went to the fucking dentist yesterday.
You fucked the dentist, what?
I went to the fucking dentist.
Okay.
Did not fuck the dentist.
Okay.
Yeah. All I can really say is go to the fucking dentist, people. Go to the dentist. Take care of your teeth. If you've got a problem, go see the dentist. Don't wait. Don't be like me.
Why? What was wrong with your teeth?
Don't need thousands and thousands of dollars of dental work.
You need thousands of... You don't have the dental insurance?
No. And most dentists will tell you that dental insurance is kind of a scam. And that's what I've...
No, it's not. Not real ones. You get like...
So many of them look so scammy.
Well, I used to get 50% off, like, you know, for my surgeries. Like, it's never 100%. It's like 50% off.
Yeah.
So what was the last time you went to the dentist before this?
Used to go to the dentist all the time. And then the last time I went to the dentist before this was probably like 4 years ago.
All the time? What does that mean? Every two
regularly.
Months?
Regularly. Like
twice
like
a year.
I would go whenever I was back home.
They used to recommend twice a year, but I think that was the Dental Association
recommending. Yeah, I don't know that that's actually necessary, but I used to go once a year.
So it's been 4 years since you've been.
Yeah.
Are you a regular brusher? And
twice a day brusher. Also a
floss
flosser.
Once a day?
Also a flosser. I usually floss before each time I brush my teeth.
You're supposed to, yeah.
But I had like an old filling fall out of two teeth, and I was dealing with other medical problems at the time, so I just kind of let it go. So.
Oh, you let it go?
Yeah, I let it go.
And it got worse.
Got worse.
Because you weren't brushing as much as you should.
No, I was brushing. It was just the old filling was garbage. It fell out. And
yeah, but I mean, like, so the old cavity got worse because,
yeah.
The filling makes sure other bacteria and bullshit doesn't get in there.
So now I got to get a tooth extracted.
Oh, really? A molar?
Yeah.
Lower molar?
Yeah. Back here.
It's that bad? It's, like, abscessed?
It's going to suck.
Was it hurting a lot? It
doesn't hurt.
Then why do you get it pulled?
Because there's absolutely... I'm not getting that much deeper into my dental health. I'm not going to show you this tooth, but this tooth is—it basically doesn't exist.
Oh, it's like rotted down.
It's not rotted. Basically where the old filling was, it fell out, and basically I cracked that molar.
Oh,
that's what happened. Oh. Yeah, it was. It's not like I bit down and.
So you can't even get a crown. You have to get rid of it.
No. It's got to go. It's got to fucking go.
Have you had a tooth pulled before?
I have. I've had all my wisdom teeth out.
It's actually not horrible. Get a tooth pulled.
It's not my favorite thing.
It's just feeling the tension of the pliers as the guy like fucking wrenches it out.
That's very strange.
But it doesn't hurt.
No,
at that point, it's just like, you know,
just some weirdness.
I've been in dentist in 8 years.
Mm.
Besides when I had to have a cap put back in, I have two caps because of a hockey accident that I predicted psychically that happened back in 2002, before, excuse me, 2004. It was like 2 months before Spider-Man 2 came out. I knew that because that was, I was like jonesing for Spider-Man 2. Everyone was. I also have a bridge from a lower tooth that never came up in. So anyway, so I've been the dentist in 8 years. I feel dentists are one step above chiropractors. There are really good ones and really bad ones. There are ones that will tell you what's proper and ones that are recommend horseshit in order to get you to pay money to alter your teeth or pull them or to get them filled when you don't need to. Because I've heard that from different dentists. Some dentists are like, yeah, some cavities are natural. You don't need to get them filled. Others will do a preemptive strike and have them filled, even if you may not need to have them filled. That came from a dentist, told me that. A dentist also have scare tactics when you go in. So we had a local dentist that my sister and I went to. It was only about a mile away from our house. And we feared him because he would, in order to see if you were brushing your gums, Ian, he would unwrap one of those, you know, those like nice 10 cent rough as hell. You could take strip metal toothbrushes, dry ass toothbrushes.
Yeah, those are my favorite ones for cleaning controllers at the store.
Yes. So imagine that same toothbrush, the ones that they give to you when you enter prison. Those toothbrushes, rubbing it against your gums to demonstrate, hey, why are your gums bleeding here? Your gums shouldn't be bleeding. Doctor, they weren't bleeding before you did that. And usually you moisten a toothbrush before you brush your teeth. Like even a soft bristle toothbrush, you might risk harming your gums if it's not, you know, some water on there. But so we were horrified at the dentist, like horrified. He was not a pleasant dentist. So, but anyway, I brush my teeth twice a day, sometimes three times, and I use a water pick. Everyone should get a water pick. They're like $25 only. It's better than flossing. It knocks out tartar. You do that regularly, and you do Listerine. You don't have to go to the dentist as often, if you're disciplined. If you're disciplined, and you have to have strong bones as well. So, the other part of my weekend, as I look at a fly here, was the Flypocalypse 2020. It started about, I want to say, last Tuesday or Wednesday. I just noticed a lot more flies in my house. I'm not sure why. We did have a very humid August, more than usual for a couple weeks.
Sure.
I'm not sure if that was. I never had a lot of flies here before. And then, so I killed like 5 flies. I thought it was the end of it. Sometimes I leave the door open. They're smart. They escape. So I got up one morning and there was like 20 flies along my back sliding glass door. I'm like, what the fuck is this? Where are these flies coming from? Where are they coming from? So the best tool to kill all these flies I found was a t-shirt that you basically fold over and you swing it like a purse because you get more surface area than a fly swatter and it's really damaging, shocks them. But these fuckers, they can come back to life in like 10 seconds. They have that exoskeleton, they come back. So I've literally killed Ian as I saw a fly in the room here. I've killed probably 80 to 90 flies the past 5 or 6 days. That's not even an exaggeration.
Oh, I believe it.
It's been fly-ticide here at Castle Country. And I don't know, like I said, I don't know where they're coming from. Like, they're not gathering around anything to eat. They're just hanging out. They're like, they're getting in somehow and can't get out.
No, they're here. That's where they are. Every summer in Ocean Beach, it can be like that. I don't get a fly. I don't have a fry. I don't have a fly problem at my current apartment, which is where I've lived for like the past 12 years. But the apartment I lived in the heart of Ocean Beach, when I moved here, every summer the flies would just be maddening. And I have trouble sleeping as it is, but if there's a fly buzzing around, fucking forget it. I cannot.
I've learned through my fly research the past week, they have different personalities. Mm. Some fear humans. Some don't give a shit and they'll buzz you. Like this guy right here was just mocked me here. You're next, fly, if you're around here, because you're one of the last ones today. But that's the thing. I would get rid of them all, Ian. Oh, before I go to sleep. Oh, there's none left, and there's like 6 the next morning. I'm like, well, I don't know where they're coming from.
Have you seen those salt guns for flies?
Salt gun? No.
I saw an ad for one the other day.
You shoot the flies like a zapper?
Yeah, it's like a gun that shoots like
salt,
I don't know,
pellets?
like an eighth of a teaspoon of salt, and it just fucking obliterates them.
Yeah. You got fly parts you got to pick up.
Yeah, I mean, I don't see it as being.
I don't
like,
say it like that.
I don't
like
see it as being particularly great because then you got to clean up the salt. But
seems fun.
Seems fun, but yes, not as effective as just using a. I'm deadly with a swatter.
But the surface area is small, though.
Lightning fucking quick. Pat.
But then you got the juices. You got
so fast.
You got to clean
just
off.
The quickest. Anyways, yeah.
What are you, Danielson with the chopsticks?
Yeah,
you doing that?
Salt gun. There it is.
The salt gun.
Yeah.
But so that. But plus, some flies will bite you. There's some, like, so
oh, yeah.
I had a big welt in my shoulder. I'm like, what the hell is that? So it's not a mosquito. I don't have mosquitoes here. It was a fly that bit me while I was probably sleeping somewhere.
Yeah, I got bit by a black fly in the Adirondacks once, and that thing,
like a horse fly, one of those big horse flies,
hurt. Yeah,
remember the big horse? Those were more back east. The big horse flies, like those things are brutal. If you get bit by those, you just go to the beach. If anyone not from the East Coast, you go to the beach, there'd be big horse flies that could bite you. You had to watch out for.
Yep.
It's ridiculous. I don't mind, I don't kill spiders, because spiders are our friends, and my spider friend took out two of those bastards. I saw the spider sunk his teeth into a couple of them, just a little clear, little beige spider got a couple of them from him. He's like, good on you, spider. Nice. I allow you, you're my helper, you're my ally.
Way to go, yeah. Spider.
Spiders are our friends, don't kill spiders, they kill all the other nasty-ass bugs that are around here. So, yeah, so that was my weekend. I also, I wrote my Quake 64 review. I wrote that one for the certain guidebook. Then I started playing yesterday. I'm doing the Midway compilation. Now I'm not
you glitching.
I'm glitching.
You glitching?
I'm glitching like the N64 emulators.
Having a fucking glitch over there.
You know those perfect. You know people. You know people got on me how I said like good emulation was years away for N64, and people would counter by, oh, I can play Zelda and Mario Kart 64. Yeah, but try playing the games no one plays on an N64 emulator, and a lot of them aren't emulated perfectly. Not even close. Like nope. A fucking Midway compilation pack where you can't even use the save state, Ian, on it. When you come back, you try to get out of it, and then like you hear the game playing, but you don't see it.
Woof.
It's not emulated perfectly, the N64. I'm not incorrect on that assessment. It's not close to a Super Nintendo or NES. Not close. I'm suffering right now trying to do this, and the other writers are too. But, you know, we'll get through it. So anyway, Ian, that's what's going on my weekend.
All right.
I'm trying to think of anything else that happened. No, but you know what's happened in the NBA 2K21 scene? Cheats using controller mods.
Oh, boy.
I know we talk about NBA 2K so much on the CU podcast. Final start, game one, Heat and Lakers on Wednesday. So what's going on here? So this is reported from Forbes. You know they like covering NBA 2K stuff. I don't know. So there's an aim mechanic.
Forbes is one of those blog sites where, like Medium, where you can just write something.
It has nothing to do with just money anymore. And business is just anything.
No, and anyone can write. It's not like there's a person there writing about it. It's I need a place to put my shit, so I'm going to put it up.
Really? It's like a Medium
it's
thing?
It's kind of like a Medium thing, yes.
Really? When did that happen?
It happened a while back. I'm not saying all Forbes articles are like that, but there is a Forbes blog that is like that. It basically just operates like a Medium.
Oh, speaking of that, Ian, we might have to... Well, when I said Medium... I checked the Atari VCS Medium.
Mm-hmm.
There was a new update yesterday.
Oh, shit. What is it? What do we got? Update.
They are shipping out the backer units.
Oh.
We have a product coming out. The shipment... It's go to medium.com/@AtariVCS. Somehow that works in there. The shipment includes the one-time-only Indiegogo-exclusive Atari VCS 800 Collector's Edition model, inspired and designed... Blah, blah, shut up. There will only be 6,000 number ready to go. Presented here for the first time are assembly line photos of the actual Atari VCS 800 Collector's Edition units. So they're fucking strapping these things together. In the plant in China, they're putting them together. Oh, they have a cool hologram sticker. Okay, I like that. Is that how they're individually numbered? You know, the 80s-style silver yeah. Hologram stickers are doing that. It's a product. We see it. They're on a pallet. They're ready to go.
Hey, well, I guess that's the best thing we can say about it.
Thousands of Atari VCS systems waiting to be trucked to the port. They're there. It's real. It's coming out this year, unlike their competitor in the console war. They're going to be out there. It's so funny. I guess this is how it works when you have something made in China. You have like the plant floor that I guess you buy, like those are the people working, and there's an Atari thing hung above the, I guess to designate this part of the warehouse is the Atari people working. Because two rows over might be another product entirely.
Sure.
You know. So anyway.
Well, anyways, NBA 2K21 controller cheats. Yeah, people are basically reassigning the shot function to a button, I guess, as opposed to a stick. So the aim mechanic was created in NBA 2K to eliminate the advantages or disadvantages that stem from the inevitable latency issue with online play. So that is being, people are working their way around that with modified controllers, which is how people have been cheating on consoles forever. I've talked about it briefly on the 360. That's how people used to cheat on Call of Duty, was with modified controllers.
So it used to be the stick, like you push it in order to shoot it.
I guess.
Which was new to the series, and now people are putting it on the L1. So when they click it, I guess it's automatically timed, so it releases a shot at the peak to that's how most basketball games in the history of time have always been. Like, if you jump, if you release at the peak of your jump, you have a higher chance of making the shot. So I guess that's automated now on these mods. So now this is screwing up people, especially when you play online.
Yeah.
It's a form of cheating. Basically.
This is why I don't like to play online. This is why
That's why you just like people in general.
I don't like people in general because they're all cheats. They're all vicious,
they're all thieves,
awful,
and cheats.
Awful cheats.
Yeah.
And I don't want to deal with them in any way, shape, or form.
So the reactions are obviously not good. To this, someone said on Twitter, "This is so sad. If true, shake my head. So to all my shooters that play the game right now, people will question if you're cheating or not. Shrug. And to all the cheating mofos out there, middle finger, you all 100. Someone said, "Listen, you have to take the whole shot stick aiming and shot stick boost shooting out of the game. People are using modded controllers and remapping the right stick to a button, so it's always center." Oh, I see. So you click down the button, you got to keep the fucking right stick center and click it? That's how you're shooting? That sounds awful. An awful mechanic to do that. Like, what? That's an effective latency? That counters latency?
I don't know. Oh, no, I'm not going to talk too much more about it because I don't really know a whole lot about it. But, yeah, you know, there's cheaters out there. Beware of the cheaters.
That's what they should bring back the old show. Instead of having people cheating at each other, you approach, you know, you bust it on some 15-year-old with a modded Call of Duty controller.
That would be kind of fun.
You know, the mom turns them in there. The Switch is family friendly. But they're bringing a controversial old fucking 23-year-old game that I have to age verify to see on the Switch site, which is funny.
Yes, the original Postal is being remastered, and it's getting a port on the Switch. It's funny. We kind of talked about this before on the podcast. I mentioned that after various dating simulators and things got up on the eShop, including a strip poker game, that it was funny to see this sort of stuff on Nintendo systems, because Nintendo was always the, when we were younger, the family-friendly system. And that changed after Mortal Kombat, and they got their clocks cleaned with the Mortal Kombat 1 sales on the Super Nintendo. But to see a company that used to be so focused on basically sanitizing everything that was released for it. It is now funny to have the Nintendo Switch where we can download or purchase a physical copy of Night Trap. We're getting Postal. We've got games with exposed anime cleavage.
Like the Gal Shoot game?
Gal Gun.
So, the interesting difference is that most of these are digital releases for the most part. And it's not like Nintendo are like really promoting these darker titles, right? People know they exist, but they're not like putting them on their indie direct. Imagine a Nintendo Direct saying, "Hey, Postal Redux," with that happy announcer, "Shoot innocent people." You know, like, that's never going to happen. So Nintendo's having their cake and eating it too, which I'm all for.
Sure.
It's still a family-friendly console. But yeah, put on this other stuff on the digital store, and if you know it exists, you go and you buy it. Like, there's no reason not to do that. So this is what I say about Postal. I'd have never liked this game, and not because of the fact that you can, like, whatever, shoot innocent people, whatever. It's just, to me, a boring-ass game. I remember playing it, and I was like, I played it for, like, 15, 20 minutes. Fly? You bastard. You're mocking me. And I just didn't have fun with it. It was okay.
Yeah, no, I remember playing it when it first came out and being like, all right, this is, yeah, it's the shock
value. It's for shock value. You can execute people, go on their knees, and they go, "Oh, don't kill me," you shoot them. It's like, oh, that's shocking for 97, but it's not a good game. At least to me, it's usually what you have a single zone or screen, and you shoot people and like above, it's way bird's eye view. That's what it is. Maybe when it came out, people were more impressed by it. Then was it Postal 2 the first person shooter one?
That's the first person shooter one, yeah.
And at that point, they got more wacky than they did the movie with Ubul or whatever. So anyway, I don't know. I don't know. It was a twin stick shooter on the computer. I just played it with a gamepad, I played on the computer, or a mouse and keyboard. I forget. I guess as a twin stick shooter, it might be a little more fun then, if you can like strafe and like and walk behind and be like...
That would probably work better at the very least.
Yeah, then it's more like Smash TV. God, I love Smash TV. So anyway, all right, check it out, I guess. I don't know.
Or don't.
All right, the Navy isn't having fun with their esports stuff. This Vice article details the marketing firm. They paid a marketing firm $2 million, and it hasn't done well. When we talked about the military not having good time on Twitch, people trolling them. Some people are thinking they shouldn't be on Twitch to try to promote military and possibly
well, it's not just trolling. They were fucking sending, like, doing fake giveaways and sending people to recruitment sites. It's not like they were innocent.
I didn't say they're innocent.
They're
not Britney Spears in 1999.
Oh, boy.
Anyway, so this article just details them just throwing away our tax dollars when it comes to this about trying to recruit with the esports team. I'm going to say this about the military trying to do this. I don't see them gaining large numbers of potential recruits from infiltrating esports. I just don't see that being the same type of person that would be like, oh, I want to play a bunch of video games. Now I'm going to sign up for the Navy next week. I don't see that, at least with the esports thing. I don't see that happening. I just don't. But, I mean, well, I guess we'll see if it works out. They're investing millions of dollars. So, members of the U.S. Navy esports team have repeatedly said they are not recruiters. This is technically true because a recruiter is a specific assignment in the Navy. We're here to show that we play video games literally. Machinist Mate First Class Andrew Salty Snipe, I like that name, Salty Snipe Crosswhite said during an early Navy stream, we're not here to recruit. This is not the point of this. Well, it's to let you know that the Navy exists, I guess, which they do in commercials and on TV and during, I guess that's what they do. The distinction between building brand awareness and active recruiting is at odds with most viewers' perception of the Navy's presence on Twitch. If recruiting isn't the end goal of building brand awareness, then what is it? Well, it's awareness, yes, of course. According to the work order between Young and Rubicam, that's this marketing firm, it was to develop a specific e-gaming strategy that includes partnering and collaborating with entities involved in the e-gaming industry, allowing for Navy-branded content pushed to those who follow these sports. The messaging will put the Navy brand on various... fuck, it's for brand awareness! Yes, yes. You increase awareness. It's marketing. That's why you do this stuff. That's why you fucking sponsor, sporting events and things. It's frustrating. Don't waste my taxpayers' dollars on fucking Twitch streams hiring. Another problem was they hired people to stream for them that weren't in the military.
Yeah,
that were assholes, it seemed like.
Yeah, that's your big problem.
They didn't even see who the fuck was doing this shit, representing them.
Obviously, like you said, it's for awareness, but why would you put up a streaming channel and then hire out? Like, it just doesn't make sense.
Yeah, I kind of almost understand, okay, we have an esports team and people in the Navy playing the game. How do you have time to get good at these games if you're in the military, if you're working? I don't know. I guess in your time off. But anyway, some of these people play these games like for 15, 16 hours a day or more to get on these esports teams. But I almost understand that, having the team. But the Twitch thing to me is just bizarre. Having like the Air Force channel. Like, that's just weird.
Yeah, it's strange. Everyone's got them.
I get it. It's for the kids. You want to be hip. I get it. It's not always a good use of your time or money, though. So, all right. Anything else to add to that?
No.
All right. You want to talk about our pal, Art of Nintendo?
Our friend, Art of Nintendo, Art of Nintendo Power, Art of NP on Twitter, Stefan, good human all around. Good human all around. Recently got a batch of prototypes and also got a Nintendo World Championships cart, a gray one, number 341, that has not been seen yet.
An ex-Nintendo employee, obviously, all this stuff came.
Right. So it's a brand new entry, which is always exciting. It's not one that has been known. And
pretty good condition.
Yeah, really nice shape.
Rivals that Pat cart for condition there.
Don't start swinging your penis around.
Swinging my NWC peen. NWC peen, really? So anyway, so he revealed it on Twitter. It's 5, 10, it's 16 prototypes. That's a lot of prototypes.
Shit
that load. Are probably at this point all in good old Frank Cifaldi's hands, mining them for the goodies inside. This is Christmas for Frank. So this is the list that was supplied to me from Stefan. Top Gear on Super Nintendo, and the rest are NES. Ready?
Mm-hmm.
Dragon Warrior 2,
mm-hmm.
TNC Surf 2. I'm actually kind of interested to see if that was different from how it ended up. Maybe you got cool cat in a tuxedo in that version, hopefully. Nintendo World Cup Soccer, that'd be interesting.
Yeah, I like that one.
Because that's not really, you know, a Nintendo game. Blaster Master, Thundercade, most average of games ever. Will Harvey's The Immortal.
Yeah.
Ian's. NES Open Golf, that would be interesting to see if there's any differences.
It would be because the Japanese and the U.S. versions are very different from each other. Yeah, so that would be very interesting to see.
Mega Man 4, Final Fantasy, but a final ROM, so that's more like a sample. Play Action Football, Dr. Mario, non-final ROM.
Yeah.
Huh? Ultimate Air Combat, uncommon game. One of my favorites on the system, Rampart. Now, this is probably... Okay, Ninja Gaiden 3... Hopefully that's the version that isn't ass hard that they made it here for some reason.
Right.
And the most important one, and probably the most exciting one of the batch, is a non-final ROM of Final Fantasy. So that could be interesting. So you have a final one and a non-final Final Fantasy.
Non-final Final Fantasy.
So this is great. We're in the golden age of game preservation. People are realizing this stuff's important. Everyone's getting the word out. You have people on Twitter. You have people, idiots on podcasts like us, saying this is important. Maybe we shame here and there to hopefully get this stuff out there. But, hey, I'm just saying, hey, we shamed a couple of times, and there's less of those situations happening now. That's all I'm saying. Call us the Preservation Sons of Liberty right here. You know, we're the ones pouring scalding hot tea down people's throats when it comes to game preservation. You need assholes like Ian and I to do that. Ian and me. Anyway. So, no, this is great. It's fantastic news.
Me and Ian. Ian and I.
After the preposition, it's Ian to me. After the verb, I'm sorry, not preposition. I'm tired still. 2 weeks in a row, I'm tired. I had the last breakfast sandwich that I ordered a week ago. It was still good, the big one last night. I think that's what it is. After I eat the breakfast sandwiches from Dunkin' Donuts, yummy as hell. The next day, I'm like just dragging ass.
It's all the carbs.
There is a lot of carbs in a bagel, surprisingly.
Surprising at all.
But it's like
carbs.
But it's like double bread, the carbs in a bagel. They like pack it in with that nice, shell.
Delicious chewiness.
I like the shell better. That shell is so good on a bagel.
Fucking love bagels.
Imagine if bread had a shell like that, like a regular piece of bread. Well, I guess they do on the edges, but it's not the same thing.
It's not the same thing.
It's not the same thing as an eggshell.
No, it's completely different. And not all bagel shells are eggshells. Just egg bagels are.
Oh, no, I mean like the eggshell. I know, that's not what I meant either. But egg bagels are fucking delicious.
Good morning.
They're so delicious and sweet.
Tuesday morning.
You like a good egg bagel?
I
love an egg bagel.
Sesame is my favorite bagel.
I like an everything bagel because you know if you want garlic or onion, I want everything. Fuck it.
Everything is really good, but more often than not, I will just take a sesame bagel. Love them. Love me a sesame bagel. Perfection.
And then you piss hot for poppy seeds.
Fuck. That's a poppy seed bagel, not a sesame seed bagel.
I even said it. I got it wrong.
Hence the word sesame.
But I knew it while I was saying it. Poppy seed. You like? I don't like poppy seed bagels. Mom used to buy.
I do, but
my mom, not your mom.
New teeth.
I said mom, like it was. I was like our mother.
Mom, collective mom.
Mom used to we used to go to Sunday mass at 10:30, Sunday mass, and then she stopped by, and you know because we didn't like go out to eat ever, but we treat ourselves. We'd have Sunday maker sandwiches, and she'd buy poppy seed buns at the local food town.
Ooh,
always had fresh in New Jersey for some reason. Well, there was a lot more Italian bakeries. You have more. Stuff I think they got from the Italian bakeries and local bakeries. I don't know if the lot was made in house, but the rolls were delicious. So we'd buy the rolls and fresh cold cuts, and we'd pig out Sunday midday. We would have like sandwiches and watch the Giants obliterate the Buffalo Bills in the late 80s or late 90s. I'm sorry, Ian. Anyway, so but they're doing good this year with Josh Allen.
3-0,
and the Giants are going to be like 1-15 after this year. Anyway, so what were we saying about our mom?
bagels,
poppy seeds. Poppy seeds are not sesame seeds. I like sesame seeds better than. I don't think poppy seeds just add texture, not really taste that much. There's a little bit of taste to poppy seeds. You know what I mean? Like sesame seeds have more of a. They're bigger. Like poppy seeds are small.
Good observation.
So there's less taste per square inch than a sesame seed. What, am I wrong?
No, you're right. But there's probably more poppy seeds on a poppy seed bagel than there are sesame seeds on a sesame seed. So it evens out. You're getting the same coating. You're getting the same surface area of seed to shell.
Seed to shell ratio?
Seed to shell ratio.
You think there's a reason why McDonald's never did poppy seeds, but they went for the sesame seed bun? They don't want people pissing hot for opium?
Maybe. What is the history on the sesame seed bun?
What is the history on the sesame seed bun? Who invented it? It was some guy like Philadelphia in 1897 or what have you here. Finally, Ian White, look that up. Our favorite streaming service, Quibi, seems to have taken a turn. Latest Variety article is that they are actively, and this is like 5 to 6 months into its existence, they're actively looking to be purchased. They're looking to sell the company.
No shit.
They're looking to sell itself.
How are you going to sell Quibi? Hey, this was a really bad idea that you've watched collapse in real time.
We have C-grade content you might want to buy that no one else wants on their streaming service that they rejected. They did win some Emmys. They won like 2 Emmys and are nominated for 10. I didn't see for what. Okay, if you didn't know what Quibi was again, they raised $1.75 billion from major studios and other investors. The studios then got the money back because they paid the studios to make content. So it was like not right. even really an investment. We kind of discussed that in the past. So it's like a semi-investment. It's like free money, found money for them. So, and of course, this isn't for anyone on the planet, this streaming service. This is why they're doing so poorly. Untested business model. They've had a weak subscriber transition from the you had it free for a month before you had to buy it, or 2 months, whatever it was. Notably, Quibi doesn't own any of the content on its service. Oh, I did not know that.
Oh.
It has 7-year licenses on its short form series, and after 2 years, content owners have the right to assemble the shows and distribute them elsewhere. Oh, Quibi sounds better all the fucking time. Are you joking? Wow, these studios Holy have shit. You over a barrel, Katzenberg, and holy shit. They're leasing the content that they're paying for. They don't even own it.
That's
wild.
Yeah, that's special.
So then after 2 years, if it was worthy to do that, they could then go put it on Netflix or on Hulu, potentially, if they wanted to. What a garbage idea for a streaming service. I'm not even going to try to hold back.
No, it's absolutely...
This is batshit crazy, Katzenberg.
Dog shit.
Crazy. And Whitman from HP. Holy God. So they're trying to sell it. They're considering trying to raise money through funding or launching an IPO. That's funny.
Got a little dangly on your chin.
It's gone. Tissue dangly or a dead fly that I slaughtered?
One of the two.
Quibi did not confirm or deny the journal report here. This is from Variety. We do not comment on rumor or speculation. Wow. Okay. Jeffrey and Meg Whitman are committed to continuing to build the business in the way that gives the greatest experience for customers, greatest value for shareholders, and greatest opportunity for employees.
There's no opportunity. It's
woo.
I mean, making it open on the internet's not going to help them, but I feel like at the very least, that's what they've got to do. They cannot keep it locked to cell phone use.
They've hit 30% of its original target. That's their internal numbers.
Ooh.
So again, this is $5 a month with ads, $8 a month without ads to watch content locked on your phone that they're now finally trying to get onto smart TVs and Rokus and things like that. And by the way, yeah, it's grade C content. A lot of the stuff I read in one article was stuff that was pitched at one point prior to Hulu or Amazon Prime or Netflix, and they're like, no, we don't want this shit. We don't want these ideas. And they go to Quibi. And they're also getting sued by interactive video company Eco, which accuses Quibi of misappropriating trade secrets and infringing 2 patents along the way.
Cool.
Not saying there's any... You know, I'm not sure there's any validity to that. Who knows? We'll see. Sometimes there is, sometimes there isn't, but it's something that they have to watch out for. So there's a cut there. All right. Well, there you go.
Yeah.
At the Primetime Emmy Awards on Sunday, host Jimmy Kimmel roasted Quibi, calling it the dumbest thing to ever cost $1 billion. But they won an Emmy. So there you go.
Before we move into the full podcast, I did just want to say that while I did not come up with any history of the sesame seed bun yet, on average...
Oh, the poppy I thought you were looking for.
No, sesame.
Oh, okay.
Sesame. On average, 178 sesame seeds on a McDonald's Big Mac bun.
Oh, they're, if that was a poppy, it'd be like 1,000.
Yeah.
Poppies are so tiny.
Yeah, exactly.
They have poppy seed hot dog buns? Really? I did not know that. Must be a thing like the Midwest or back east.
I had one of those in Chicago.
People ask on Google, why do they put poppy seeds on buns? Poppy seeds add a distinct nutty, earthy flavor to the bun itself. Yeah. Said Stephanie Powell, director of marketing for Alpha Baking.
Well, and then if you look at, so the same question is here, why are sesame seeds on buns? Sesame seeds add texture, visual appeal, flavor, and contrasting color to a plain brown bun.
It's a minor flavor. They
give the impression that the burger is more interesting than the average burger.
That's what
and
it
therefore
is.
More appealing to diners.
It looks
just
better.
A visual thing. Yeah.
No, poppy seed, you know what? Poppy seed buns, I take back. There is more of an earthy flavor than that one thing about it. It is a little bit different than a regular one. And you might get a buzz from the opium. Who knows? All right, we're on to the main podcast. Ian!
Yes, Patrick.
Game streaming is all the rage. Streaming in general. You know how well Google Stadia has been doing the past year?
So, Amazon has announced their own streaming service called Luna. Might have a little problem there, bud.
Uh-oh, trademark, Ian.
Trademark.
Trey might file that lawsuit.
So, Luna is going to be a streaming service from Amazon. It's going to be $5.99 a month during its early access phase, which gives subscribers the ability to play Luna Plus channel games across two devices simultaneously. It offers 4K 60 frame per second resolution for select titles. Naturally, it will be powered by AWS, Amazon's ubiquitous web platform. That's from The Verge.
Yeah, like half the fucking websites on the planet are powered by AWS. It's a lot.
So basically this, they don't go through and say how much the games are going to retail for, but basically this sounds like it's going to be a Stadia sort of deal where if you pay $5.99 a month, there'll be
some freebies?
A plus option. There'll be freebies. It doesn't go into much about whether or not there'll be a free version or what the pricing will be for standalone games. It does say that there will be more than 100 games available, including Resident Evil 7, Control, Panzer Dragoon, A Plague Tale, The Surge 2, Yooka-Laylee, Grid, Abzu, Brothers Tale, Two Sunblood, etc., etc., etc. One thing that they do bring up that's interesting is that they say that there's going to be specific gaming channels for certain publishers. So they're talking about doing one with Ubisoft first. Players who subscribe to this channel will have access to their favorite Ubisoft titles in up to 4K resolution, mobile gameplay, and access to new titles when the channel launches, like Assassin's Creed Valhalla, Far Cry 6, and Immortals Fenyx Rising the same day they release. First of multiple channels that are going to be similar, etc., etc. So they don't also go into enough detail here, but what it sounds like is there will be separate channels that you can probably subscribe to for a fee that would probably give you access to those
specific publisher games?
Those publishers.
Like EA Origin sort of service sort of thing?
Yes. That's
smarter.
That's a smarter idea than people who are really into, like, the Ubisoft games could probably, for a much lower price, or, you know, for a monthly price, would get access to those games what sounds like the day they release, as opposed to having to go out and buy a $60 title if you're subscribed to that channel. It sounds like, we're not entirely sure, that you would get access to that. So that's interesting. The response to this announcement, though, was not particularly great. Stadia has not done much of anything to excite people. And the companies that do offer streaming, game streaming, also tend to offer the downloading of the game. So, like, Sony's PlayStation Now, for the most part, not all the games, but most of them offer a download option. And I believe the Xbox streaming service does as well. But if not, there's... So Amazon announced this. On Twitter, this was announced. And...
They had their Amazon sort of tech conference where they, like, announced stuff like a security drone that flies around your house, which was interesting. Too much, you know, futuristic.
Yeah, terrifying. Nibelian, a Twitter user who has about 200,000 followers and posts a lot of video game stuff, posted this, linked to the Verge article, and then replied afterwards. I see people are absolutely pumped for this. You go through these replies, and
where do you see these at?
It's on Twitter.
Okay, I don't have a link to that. Damn you, Ian.
But the replies are just like, immediately, hope it flops, with a thumbs up. Can we stop with the cloud gaming? I think we have enough.
Well, okay.
Thumbs down, gifts. I
understand that because Google Stadia is a train wreck.
They're all going to be a train wreck, and I don't think AWS is going to fix it. We're not at the point where this is viable.
The difference is this. Amazon doesn't like things to fail. They're not. They don't have the Google mindset of, we're going to give up on this. Amazon has the money, and they have the patience for this. Most importantly, they have Twitch, which is, this is going to be integrated with. And the integration itself gives them more of a incentive to keep it going, to push it, because if they have streamers that can stream all this stuff on there, it's like you're advertising both things at the same time. So that's where I think it's a lot different than Google Stadia. I'm not saying it's going to be great off the get-go. You're still going to have, like you said, you're going to have latency issues here and there. But there's a better reason for this to exist, if I'm Amazon, than Google Stadia, because of the Twitch integration itself. That's a big selling point, I think. That it might be to some people. Let's put it this way. I'm not saying there's too many streamers to support this. But if I'm a streamer, Ian, and like when you stream, streaming is brutal, and you have to have the newest and latest game to have an audience. If Amazon is providing me a service where I can get some of these games for free, potentially with a subscription service, I don't have to shell out $60 over and over again every other week, potentially, or every month for a new game. Maybe I can buy this service, and I can get it, and I can stream it on Twitch, and then it works if I'm a Twitch streamer, and I'm advertising the game. Obviously, you can't have your business based off of Twitch streamers, but that's something. It's something that could work there.
I think there are definitely more bells and whistles with this that make it more appealing than Google Stadia, but they can want game streaming to work all they want. The technology's not there yet.
But, there's the AWS having the cloud is one thing, but then people's internet connection is the other. They have the technology to run it, but do people have the technology to receive it competently? Obviously, that's the difference there. Let's talk about the controller real quick. It's different than the Google Stadia one. It has the two sticks in different areas. Obviously, it has everything else you can expect from any controller made in the past 15 years. It has your D-pad. It has four face buttons. It has a home button, a volume button, or whatever. It has four triggers on there. That's going to be $50 with early access period. Luda controller is an Alexa-enabled device. Okay, that's interesting. I guess you can talk to it to start things up. Connects directly to the cloud to effortlessly control your game. It features a multiple antenna design that prioritizes uninterrupted Wi-Fi for lower latency gaming. Our testing showed a reduction in round-trip latency when playing Luna controller with Cloud Direct versus Luna controller via Bluetooth. That's a little interesting if that's different technology, using cloud Wi-Fi versus Bluetooth. Reductions of between 17 to 30 milliseconds among PCs, Fire TV, and Mac. Because the Luna controller connects directly to cloud servers, players can easily switch between screens, such as Fire TV to mobile phone, without additional pairing or configuration changes. There, that's something Stadia doesn't have, and that's actually pretty cool. It is.
It's interesting.
It's something new. The other thing is that I believe this is also going to be available on iOS.
It is, because from what I was reading, it runs through the website, not through an app.
So that's something you couldn't get Google Stadia, I don't think, on a
No, app. I think you can. The Xbox...
xCloud?
xCloud will not run. You can't do xCloud on the iOS because it requires an app that they do not have on the app store. I believe Stadia can be... I believe Stadia is the same way. I believe Stadia Google can Stadia be done through iOS.
iOS app. Let's see.
I don't think it's an app. That's what I'm getting at. It's just done through the website, so I don't think you need an app.
Apple's confirming it won't allow services like Google Stadia on its platform for iPhone or iPad users.
Well, all right.
That came out August 7th. So there you go. This is already, I think, way ahead of Stadia. And like I said, I think this one will not be dropped by Amazon anytime soon. They're not like Google say, well, this sucks, we're going to get rid of it.
I'm not saying they're not going to support it. I just don't think it's anything to be excited about. Certainly not right
I'm
now.
I'm not personally excited. Not I just yet. Think this has a better shot of relevance than Google Stadia.
Oh, yeah. Google Stadia is not going to have... I mean, it's lasted longer than I guessed. But, I don't see Google Stadia sticking around. Or at least having the relevance when something like xCloud or this potentially is going to outshine it.
Yeah, and maybe this is something where... maybe
even if Google doesn't drop it, there's going to be better options. So it's already kind of pointless.
And maybe they could build in something with Prime with this to push Prime. See, that's the thing about Amazon that the reason why Amazon does so well is everything is...
Because they're evil.
Yes, because they're evil, but they also do smart to integrate everything with each other. Twitch to Prime to Prime streaming stuff. It's all the same ecosystem. Google doesn't have an ecosystem of anything that works. They tried with YouTube and with Google Plus, and obviously that failed miserably. Amazon, make smarter purchases of things, and they don't just throw shit against the wall. They have a plan. At least that's what I see. I mean, Jeff Bezos obviously has a plan because, you know, he's fucking richest guy in the world. So he did something right, starting a little book-selling website. So what do I know? I'm here in a podcast talking about poppy and sesame seed buns. Anyway. So anyway, yeah. So I think the controller stuff is interesting with the Wi-Fi being better than Bluetooth with the cloud. That's never heard of something like that before, but it'd be interesting to see that in practice. And it's on all your devices. So there you go. Not saying I'm going to get it, but some people I think will. Anything else to add, Ian?
No. Nothing.
All right. Ian... our pal Blake Harris, author of Console Wars, The History of the Future VR book. He wrote a foreword for a certain NES Guy book, and he's now currently working on a book with Larry David. That sounds incredible to be able to talk to Larry David. He also produced a documentary based upon the Console Wars book, which was historical fiction. It was based on interviews, but he made a narrative and dialogue on things that could have or probably happened, but you know,
sure.
So it's fiction based upon nonfiction. It's like that weird in between. This is a documentary, though. It's totally a straight documentary, nonfiction with interviewees and a cute sort of video game art and cutscene reenactments there. So this came out, Console Wars. We got an early preview link. We watched it, and it's gotten good reviews. And I enjoyed this documentary. It's about 90 minutes. It details, it starts at Tom Kalinske being hired by Sega to bring him on the flailing Genesis, because he used to work in toys and marketing in order to turn the ship around. And it goes from there and coming up with Sega and then going all the way towards it sputtering out after the disastrous release of the Sega Saturn. So it covers like 6 years, about 6 years in time here. What I thought was interesting about this documentary was that they managed to get all the ex Nintendo and Sega employees, and they didn't care about being honest. They didn't try to be nice about people from the other company that they said they didn't like them or didn't appreciate things they did, and they were totally honest, and that was good. They were very emotive about their experiences. Even today you can see the rivalry between them, saying, oh, that was BS, or I can't believe they did that back then, like, you know, the rival marketing things about, oh, blast processing was total, you know, like bullshit. Someone from Nintendo said it. It might have been Gail Tilden said that, and it was just interesting to see the perspectives of the people that were behind the trenches going through that, because we were just on the playground yelling about it. I said blast processing is bullshit when I was a kid, you know, but to see the employees talk about that stuff was really interesting, how they you know, volleyed back and forth on the battles.
I watched it. I enjoyed it for the most part. I watching it, though, and, you know, to go off what you said, I always wonder how much of that is we got to make it seem like there's conflict for TV, and how much of it is truly deep-seated. Do these people really still hate each other or dislike each other over business decisions from, you know, 25 years ago? I personally find it easier to separate business from personal, and I realize that some people can't, and I realize that if it's your life and it's a big deal like it would have been back then working for these video game companies, that maybe some of these things do stick. Maybe grudges do hold.
It's your livelihood.
Yes, but I also want, yeah, but I you know, they if everyone's super chummy on TV as well, it doesn't make for as good of a narrative. Yes. So I do believe that there is probably still some, you know, bad blood there, but I wonder if it's as much as it seems to let on.
Yeah, I mean, they almost got in a fight in the street. Tom Kalinske and his counterpart from Nintendo, I forget his name. Was it Peter? God. Now is my one problem with the documentary is it was hard to
Howard. It was Howard Lincoln, I'm pretty sure.
It was Howard Lincoln?
I'm pretty sure it was Howard Lincoln.
It's hard to keep track of all the different names.
It is, yes.
Like, you know, that lady's from Sega, that lady's from Nintendo, he's from here, but it's hard to, like, keep track of, okay, what exactly do they do for the company at a certain point in one of their names, I hate to say it, in positions. That was the only thing, because there's, like, literally, they talked to, like, I think about five or six people representing both sides, and it keeps going back and forth there. Everyone came off, you know, authentic. Everyone had some little digs here and there, except for good old Howard Phillips. He was just a nice, you know, hey, everything's rosy. Oh, Sega, Sonic was interesting, and they did well. Like, I love Howard Phillips. That's how he is in real life, though. He's very nice and authentic.
Yes.
It was good. I was okay meeting my hero, Howard Phillips. They say don't meet your heroes. I don't mind meeting Howard.
No, Howard's one you can meet. He's very friendly, very nice.
No, I didn't meet another one that wasn't as good, but Howard Phillips was a good one. Good hero to meet there. So, yeah, like I said, it was entertaining. I thought the one thing about these historical video game documentaries I've seen, and with way more with High Score, is that, and I understand why they do it. It's probably from the network. They have to, for some reason, find a way to constantly try to make it more over the top, funny humor stuff. And I get that. They try to associate that with video games. I just wish I could see one of these documentaries that plays it a little more straight and it's not constantly throwing in humorous stuff, either whether it's in the little cutscenes or what have you. Like I said, I get it, but it still leans on, oh, video games are for kids and humorous. But they were well done, and it wasn't all the same graphic style. Like the problem I had with Netflix High Score was that it was all this weird early 90s PC graphic style, which did not fit the content. Here it changed it up radically depending on what they were talking about. They had like Street Fighter 2, they had an overhead, one of my favorite things was like an overhead Pac-Man game when you had the Sega of Japan evil harsh, you know, president running around gobbling
was
up
that
the workers.
Nakayama-san, I think.
Yes, that's what it was. So like he was going around gobbling. So it was funny with his weird hair going,
with his comb over flowing behind him.
Very clever, very cute little interstitial cutscenes to describe the environment. But like I said, I'd love to see a documentary sort of play it straighter.
I don't mind drier documentaries, but I didn't mind the humor. The humor was light enough. It's when the humor is very bad that I find it unnecessary. But I thought it was fairly light. I didn't think it relied all that much on humor, honestly. I thought the funny parts were amusing. I liked the cartoon, the cartoon / animated intro where Kolinsky is being taken to Japan.
Yeah, he's still in his shorts.
Yeah, he's in his shorts the whole time. Yeah, like he literally just got.
That's what I mean.
It
was like, okay,
beach.
I get it. It's.
I thought it was funny. It was cute. Necessary? No, but yeah, I liked it. I don't know that I thought the time warp part was necessary, where they go back and talk about the beginnings of Nintendo.
Yeah,
and it dabbles a little on the it dabbles a little in the video game crash and stuff like that. I would love to see a video game documentary that doesn't feel the need to fucking talk about the video game crash at every opportunity. It's like the origin story in a superhero movie. We're getting to the point where every video game documentary is going to talk about the crash somewhat. And I realize that it's an important thing to cover. And if you're covering a large span of time, if you're trying to cover multiple eras like High Score did or the video game years did, you want to cover it. But I did not think that there was a need to cover it in this one. I think going into it, you could have just focused on the war, the console war itself. There were things that they could have talked about that they did. I don't know that part really made sense to me.
They just spent a lot of time on the crash. They have to mention it just because you have to mention that when you talk about Nintendo coming to the U.S. You have to. You have to bring that up.
But you don't. If it's about the console war, you don't have to always... You don't always it up.
They wanted to show that, because when they present Nintendo as this giant Goliath, they wanted to go back in time to show, hey, this is how Sega used to be in the U.S. They were kind of small. That's what they were trying to do.
Sure, I get that. I'm just saying I don't think it needs to be brought up single time.
They didn't cover it in High Score, surprisingly.
Oh, that's right. You said they didn't. They talked about
they
how
said
they were
it,
going.
It's coming, but they don't show it. And it's like, why can't you not show that? So they didn't do that for there. So there was a couple of historical things. The pacing was good up until the last 20 minutes. That was the one thing where I didn't like. Where
it did kind of fall apart. It seemed like it didn't know where to go once it got to the
PlayStation.
Sony stuff, yes.
Yeah.
Once it started juggling three balls instead of two, it seemed like...
Well, they could have, but I think they, for some reason, and I don't like how this is with modern cinema and with documentaries, they had this 90-minute, I think, cutoff they wanted to hit no matter what. And I think the film suffers a little bit because of that. I think if you had 10 more minutes, maybe 15 minutes, you could have went into the Sony stuff a little bit deeper. You could have went into the Saturn a little bit deeper than what they did.
They didn't even mention that the Saturn was surprise released at E3. I was watching for that. They brought up the Saturn release, but they didn't talk about how it was in stores now.
Oh, yeah, the one part where it's like, oh, you can get it
right
now.
I mean, that's pretty important. And, you know, they talked about how they were rushing it, and I have no idea how you leave out something that big, especially when it's part of the reason why one of the many reasons why the Saturn failed.
Yeah, they try to build in the last 25 minutes, they try to build, I guess, the distrust between Sega of America, Sega and Japan, saying, well, they didn't agree with here for the first time.
Which was good and interesting. I mean, that's a good thing to have up there.
But they should have went back previous and started earlier with the 32X. And they didn't mention the 32X at all. And I think that's one of the biggest problems with the
film. They showed it.
But they didn't say anything about it.
Yeah.
They showed the Sega CD for like two little clips, but didn't mention the launch or anything. So I think I would have rather have seen the story that's more in the book about the Sega CD does all right. 32X is a massive failure. And that massive failure led into the Saturn's failure. Not having that bridge,
yes,
I think, does a disservice to the story. Because they try to build it off of, well, we had a failed dealing with Silicon Graphics, who then ended up doing Donkey Kong Country and the N64. But the N64 isn't what killed Sega, though.
Right,
so I think, like, it's that's nice to bring that up, that you should have listened to me, because maybe if Silicon Graphics worked with Sega, things would have been different. But I think not telling the 32X story is a huge thing that was my
big takeaway at the end. Was, we're talking about the console war. If you want to hit 90 minutes, you can leave out that Nintendo 1984
retrospective.
You can leave out the retrospective, and like I said, it's a good story, but I don't think they needed to derail the pace of the film to do that,
yeah,
when they could have spent that 10-15 minutes on, like you said, the 32X and the Sega CD.
You only needed 5 minutes for the 32X, probably. You could have got through the 32X in terms of, oh, they wanted to push it out. We said we're not comfortable putting this out. We just put out the CD. And then sort of build up that early mistrust between the two, Sega of America and Sega. Because, I mean, we talked about this a few months ago, how horribly the 32X did. It did disaster. They only sold 800,000.
Yeah.
That's horrifying to sell that little. Like, that was the early, not nail in the coffin, but you built up the customer distrust that soon. Okay, we'll go to the Sega Saturn now, and then you can't have two failures like that in a row.
Right.
You can't. And they did. And that's what it was, even before the Dreamcast, which they didn't get to, which I don't think you needed to for this to bring up, because Tom Klinsky left the company and was kind of following his
path. No, they left it in 96. They basically stopped at the launch of the N64. And, I mean, the Dreamcast was technically post-PlayStation, so they didn't need to bring it up.
So that was my only big thing. I would have loved to see the third. I guarantee you they shot that stuff.
Oh, they absolutely
did. Yeah, they shot. I want to see it.
Like I said, they showed the 30. That was another weird thing towards the end for me, is they showed the 32X. They showed the Sega CD. It was like they had footage that they had intended to use for voiceover or interview that they did not use.
Yeah, if you had 10 more minutes here, I think even 10 more minutes, you could have fleshed out Sega CD and 32X in 10 minutes total. About 5 minutes each. I think you could have done that.
Could have gotten the important stuff out there. Yes.
Yeah. So that was, like I said, that was it. That and just one minor historical inaccuracy is that they talk about, well, we're not coming to the Super Nintendo with Blood and Mortal Kombat. So then they show a shot of Mortal Kombat 2 with green blood. That's Mortal Kombat 2. Mortal Kombat 2 had blood on Super Nintendo. So they should have shown... They should have shown the real Super Nintendo Mortal Kombat.
Which was the white sweat.
Yeah, or gray sweat. Whatever you want to say. Like, yeah. It wasn't
the green.
And it wasn't Mortal Kombat 2. That's the only thing that I dislike. I was like, okay, well, they did that for effect, but that wasn't the game. So the Super Nintendo 2 Mortal Kombat, Super Nintendo Mortal Kombat 2 is great. Like, that's fine. Like, by then they figured it out. And I like that they had the... I loved the fact that they got so much of the conference and E3 footage and stuff in the floor. I loved that. I loved, like, just the random stuff of, like... You know, they're like showing the floor of Mario, and then there's Howard Phillips just playing a game, and he turns around and looks at, like, I love that shit. Like, that's great that they got so much of that stock file stuff. Probably from the I don't know who would have had that, some of that footage. That wasn't like YouTube footage. Like, the quality was too good on that stuff.
Right.
You know, and then they had like the conference stuff of all the, you know, Howard Lincoln and everyone else. You know, they're like dressed as like, you know, big game hunters, and they shoot and they show Sonic being dead. It's like, that's fun stuff to see. I hadn't seen some of that stuff before. So check it out. It's on CBS All Access, not for resale. It was a fun time. It was good to see the story being told like that. And yeah, it was well produced.
Yeah, it was good.
And football season is already here. I was on the couch Sunday watching a game with a nice, refreshing Miller High Life.
Miller High Life's the perfect beer for football. It's a refreshing beer. It's affordable. It's accessible to all. It's an unpretentious quality beer with refreshing champagne-like tiny bubbles and an iconic glass bottle, that slim bottle we all know and love. Big or small, there's always moments worth celebrating. You can do that with Miller High Life. You can relax with friends, kick back with some Miller High Life, watch the day roll by. It's been faithfully brewed the same way since it started on New Year's Eve in 1903. That's over 100 years of quality brewing.
You know it's a quality beer if it's been around for over 100 years.
That's right. Miller High Life, the champagne of beers, a quality beer within everyone's reach. Celebrate responsibly. Miller Brewing Company, Milwaukee, Wisconsin.
All right, Ian. With Flash, being unsupported, not supported anymore by Adobe end of the year, we're going to have some tough times for some Flash games.
Yeah, we're going to be losing some Flash games. There are people who are currently trying to preserve them by converting them to HTML5. Also, just because Flash is going away doesn't mean you won't be able to download the game to your computer and play it using a Flash player. It's just not going to exist on the internet anymore, which is where most people play Flash stuff. I wonder if the majority of people know that you can right click and usually like download those files and play them like offline. But Farmville, the quintessential Facebook game, will be shutting down on December 31st. In-app purchases will come to a halt on November 17th, to keep people from dumping money into a currency that they won't be able to use immediately.
They want to piss them off afterwards.
Right. So, I never got into Farmville or its numerous clones. I think Farmville, I can't remember which came first, Farmtown or Farmville. They were different companies, though.
Was there also like Maple Story? Was that one of them?
Maple Story was not Facebook. Maple Story is like a side-scrolling like RPG. But, I mean, that was a popular game, but that's not...
Wasn't on one of these?
I don't believe Maple Story was Facebook, no. I remember these coming out, and I remember my friends and even some family getting wildly addicted to the Zynga games on Facebook. Farmville took farming and turned it into... it kind of really perfected the free-to-play template, limiting the amount of things you can do in a certain amount of time so that you are tempted to basically buy more turns that you can use before they replenish. So that's how a lot of free-to-play games work, especially ones like these. Planting plots or building buildings cost a certain amount.
It's a freemium game.
Right.
Remember, this is before app, like basically the big app games. This is like a year or two before them.
So, it costs time or energy to do actions in these games, whether it's harvesting, building buildings, selling things, grooming animals, etc. And when you run out, you have to wait for that energy to replenish. Usually it happens every couple of hours or every 24 hours, depending on the game, and then you go back. Of course, there's a way to break that, and you can just pay more money to gain that energy back, and you can keep playing indefinitely. These games, there was ways to visit other people's farms. You could help them harvest their fruits and vegetables. So basically that was, it was always...
Like Stardew Valley. It's like a...
Yes, but not as nice.
Not as intense, yes.
Well, not as nice, yeah.
A little more simple.
But these games always revolved around either you paying money into them or harassing enough of your friends to play with you.
Oh, really?
So that
you... Do things together?
Yes, so that you didn't need to, A, wait for your time or energy to come back or pay for more of it. You could basically act as a recruiter for Zynga, and if you got more people to play, you would gain bonuses. And that's how it worked. It was almost like, a chain letter sort of thing. It was, you got to keep this going. You got to find new people to play.
Wow.
Like I said, I never got super into it. My girlfriend at the time was very much into Farm Town, which was a similar type game. I remember...
Farm Town?
Farm Town. Yes.
Are you farming in the town?
Farm Town.
Or are you just hanging out in the town?
I mean, it was just called Farm Town, man. I don't know what to tell you.
Okay, I thought you were the expert. It's your girlfriend playing it. Okay.
It's just called Farm Town. I mean, is that
why you broke up? She was playing too much?
No. You farm just like you did in Farmville. And I remember there was like ways to hack the game and cheats, and people would spend lots of time designing these farms. But yeah. Anyways, I didn't know people still played these, but I would not be surprised. I don't know what Facebook is like anymore. So I can't use Facebook.
So it's not available anymore on the iPhone? It said it was a mobile app for a brief period in 2010. Did they get rid of it? Can I not buy this on my iOS? Is this real?
I mean, that's what they're telling you.
Hey, I'm following up. Wikipedia is not always 100% correct here, but I don't think someone would make that up. Farm. There's got to be a version on here, or at least 1,000 clones. Well, the sequels are on here. Farmville 2, Country Escape, Tropic Escape, and then Farmville 3.
I'm assuming that Farmville 2 is probably just more tuned for phone.
Yeah, the original's not available. You got to get the sequel.
Yeah, it was probably just more tuned for phone, whereas the original was more tuned for Facebook.
There's also Family Farm Seaside and a bunch of similar ones out there. There's probably 50 of these things. Okay, there's Town Village. There it is, Ian. Found Town Village. So, okay. So, this was obviously huge. I remember playing this myself for, like, maybe 15 minutes back when it came out. Because it was everywhere. Oh, let's check this out. Until, like, the same thing I got when I played The Sims. I go, what the hell am I doing with this? This is a waste of my time. Don't get sucked in. And you cut it off. Wish I did that with Civilization. But and I stopped playing at the time. Like, again, it's probably 2009 or 10. But, okay. How many people played this? This is in the article here. And I just had it up. They had, many people. Oh, no, as many as 83.76 million active users per month, not total, in a big month, 83 million people.
Yep.
That's insane.
It is. And it goes to show that the Facebook game idea was...
Shoot the fly. Sorry. Go on.
It was smart.
To fly on my laptop.
Okay.
No, keep going.
No, I'm watching you shoot the fly.
Missed him. Go on.
You hit it, but you pushed him.
Oh, I pushed him off.
And he flew away. Those games were perfectly built for Facebook, though. For the majority of users, they would sign on, check a couple of things, play 5 minutes of these farm games, and you're an awful shot. I can't talk if you're going to be shooting at flies. Like, I can't pay attention.
Got
there
him.
You go.
I got him.
Congrats. He's dead. But they were perfectly designed for that. The sign in, play for 5-10 minutes, check up with people, and then go about your day. But people became a lot more obsessed with them than that. And then also people started spending more time on Facebook than was probably healthy.
And then I'm sure a bunch of other clone games.
Yes, tons.
Bunch of freemium games going on. How are they? Were they just literally like, oh, here's a link to play? That's how they spread a lot of, like... I don't remember seeing, I think, advertisers on Facebook. I'm trying to remember. Facebook was radically different 10 years ago, but I'm trying to remember how it looked in terms of the advertising on there.
I don't remember.
It's not that there were promoted posts as much. There had to have been, but it wasn't like now where anyone can spend $100 and promote a post.
Right. Well, that's why they gave stuff away to people who recruited more players. That's why there was such an emphasis on getting other people to play.
So it was a cult. It was a cult of Farmville.
Yes.
Basically, at the time. Wow. Okay. So good on Zynga for coming up with this. I love their poker game. I wonder how much money they made off of this game. It's probably not a small amount.
No,
because again, this is like before. This is even before this got big on app stores and games. I mean, smartphones didn't get big for at least a few years after this came out.
If I'm wrong, someone can correct me. But I'm fairly certain that Zynga made its initial mark on Facebook. I think that's where they got big.
Well, that's where the poker first was.
And then they went, then they went to phones afterwards and all that blew up. But yeah, I think Zynga's, initial popularity comes from their Facebook games.
Zynga Poker was Facebook 2007. That was their first thing. So they basically then came up with, after that, let's see, 40 million people playing Zynga. Because Zynga's the same way. Zynga gives you free chips.
And Zynga Poker, you mean?
Zynga Poker. They give you chips for free, and then obviously if you're good enough, you're not going to lose them. But if you lose them, Ian, you can wait to get more free chips, like whatever it is, every day you get bonus, or you got to buy them.
Gotcha.
So Pat never had to buy them because, I'm decent at poker on my phone. But, yeah, that's how it works. When you get friends that you give free chips back and forth. So like, it might encourage you, maybe not to recruit, but at least on the app, you can like add friends to do that and play games with them. Either way, it's free. Hey, it's free to play it though, so you can't complain if they want to make some money. Obviously, it's capitalism. So anyway, so that's how Zynga got big. Zynga Poker, and then Farmville. God bless them. And then Cityville came out in 2010, and it surpassed Farmville as its most popular game. Okay, so it wasn't City Farm, wherever you said it was Cityville.
No, Farmtown. Farm different Town. Game made by a different company.
Oh, okay.
Jesus.
So is Farmtown like Cityville?
No. Farmtown is like Farmville. I don't know what's so hard
but
to understand.
But a farm's not a town, though. You don't have a farm in a town.
Mm, a farm is not a ville either, Pat.
Is a ville a thing, though? I think Farmville is closer than Farmtown. You just meant I might have bludgeoned that fly to death with a dollar store dart gun there. All right, so that's anything else to add here?
No.
Okay, so I can't think of another. Well, the good news is that people are still playing the later versions, iterations of this. So it's not like the game is disappearing entirely. It's just this version is going bye-bye. I wonder if Zynga fought tooth and nail to keep this going somehow, because they're probably still making money off this, obviously. It's just maybe, obviously, at this point, it's diminishing returns versus all the other sequels.
Well, they probably have, I mean, without looking, they probably have sequels that are in HTML5 now, so they probably have things to fall back on. I'm sure that they haven't been developing everything in Flash up until the last minute.
Zynga, they're not hurting for food. They're keeping the lights on, so they're all right. All right, Ian, saw this tweeted out. Interesting topic for an NES homebrew. This is a like a one-on-one 2D. Well, Smash Brothers is 2D, but it's an NES basically 8-bit Smash Brothers game.
It's a one-on-one Smash Brothers.
It's one-on-one. You have little weapons. It's cute. You fight each other. It's called Super Tilt Bros, which is funny.
Super Tilt Bro.
Oh, bro? No S?
No S. Super Tilt Bro. And it looks good, but that's honestly not the most interesting thing about this. It's that the cartridge that is in development that it's going to be put on contains a Wi-Fi chip, so you can play online with other people on your NES. Connects you to a server, and you can find players from there. And that's crazy to think about that, and if it works, and if it works well, how else that can be implemented into other games and things going forward.
So first off, you can play the alpha version of this game for free online. It's available. I'll link it there. Super Tilt Bro, period. Super Tilt Bro is a remake of the Super Smash Brothers series compatible with the good old Nintendo Entertainment System. You and a friend take control of a clone of Sinbad, the badass mascot of Ogre 3D. Not familiar with Ogre 3D. Two fellows, one platform. You have to fight to throw the other out. Okay. So, yeah, you have special moves and attacks, and you can jump with yeah, it's great. I love D-Makes, and if this is a good game, it's a good game. But let's talk about this this Wi-Fi. So this is going to be on the chip inside the cart, like the custom chip, or I guess the mapper chip is going to have this little Wi-Fi thing in there. And this is interesting that when you think that the NES homebrew scene has peaked or had reached its sort of highest level, that something like this comes along, or something like Galf or Jane Sawbob Mall Brawl.
I think we're finally getting to the point with the homebrew scene where it's actually interesting.
Because the games are actually good.
Because for years it was not interesting to me at all. The games weren't particularly impressive.
Well, either they weren't impressive, or they were straight out stealing from prototypes of games that didn't come out. That's what the homebrew scene was, of games
I'm not talking about prototypes. I'm talking specifically about
Original games.
That's homebrew. I'm talking about actual homebrew games.
Well, I guess technically homebrew, they were altering some little things on some of those prototypes, but yeah. But this is interesting. I wonder if this would rejuvenate people to want to actually get out their NES consoles again to play this, versus just playing it on a computer, you know, or on an emulator. But I'm trying to think about, if this is successful, what other homebrews could utilize something like this. And thinking about past games, what sort of games would you be able to pull off multiplayer pretty well? Keep in mind that they're taking a little risk here, because obviously with a fighting game, you know, that's the biggest sort of complaint about latency of any online game is usually a fighting game. You have to be so split second. I know it's an NES game. It's not like, you know, you're not putting in combos like with a GameCube controller, or you know what I mean? But still, it's got to be pretty on point, or you can't play a fighting game. But could you do like a modern homebrew sports game that have two players, or like ice hockey? That could be fun.
Yeah, sports game.
Racing?
Or, I was thinking something like Super Dodgeball.
Super Dodgeball
would be very good for that. It would be interesting to see if they could do like a, you know, if you could get connect to more than one at a time. Whoa. Instead of just one on one. The thing that I thought of immediately for whatever reason was the beanball mode in Super Dodgeball and seeing like how many people could you get doing that at one point in time.
Okay, I was thinking of, I don't know, the game you ever heard of, this game on NES, esoteric game. Called Danny Sullivan's Indie Heat, four-player racing.
Oh, that'd be great.
Single screen. Because with those games, you can get away with maybe a minor latency versus a fighting game. It wouldn't be as noticeable, maybe. I don't know. This is fascinating technology. I don't know. I didn't know this was in the works. And I'd be interested to see how it plays in theory once they... It sounds like though it's like full on in development. Like this is going to happen at some point. They're going to do this.
I think it would work really well with a racing game like Micro Machines, Eliminator Boat Duel, or RC Pro-Am. Any of those games that, you know, they tried at, well, RC Pro-Am 2, they tried to do the two-player on the same screen, but you can't because it's overhead. So when you start to fall off the bottom, it just automatically pushes you.
Oh, so take that same concept, because Micro Machines concept sucks ass.
Micro Machines concept is great.
No, it sucks. The two-player mode sucks. It sucks. You fall behind for 1 second in your head. It sucks.
That's what I'm saying. I'm saying you take that idea.
But actually make it a real racing game.
But do it. Yeah. You know, you could each person playing would have their own separate viewpoint.
And you don't win by getting a screen ahead five times or whatever and not seeing the fucking racetrack ahead because you're ahead. So then you screw up and then your opponent goes ahead of you and you lose your cousin for the 8th time in a row because he knows the map heart by heart. You don't. Sorry, I didn't own the fucking game. My parents didn't get it for me off QVC. They weren't upper middle class Chris. Sorry, what was I saying? Oh, okay. So super tilt bros, bro. So I would love to see this in practice. There'll probably be a Kickstarter for these carts next year. I don't know. I guess I would love to see how much the extra hardware of the chip is going to cost. What this is going to cost. Because if it's developing an NES game, producing an NES game roughly now is around $20 to do a homebrew. Like $20 with everything there. Hopefully this doesn't add that much to it. Hopefully like only like $5 or so. Like if you add like $20 to it and all of a sudden the $60, or usually they charge $50 for these games, you don't want to see like $70 or $80 for that. But we'll see the technology. It gets cheaper as it goes along, and then maybe someone developing a game sees if it's successful, they add it to their design of game, wink. But we don't know. So what character should be in Super Tilt Bro you should see show up?
I don't know. I'm not sure if they're actually pulling characters from there, but I think Simon Belmont and Mega Man would make great additions.
Oh yeah, but obviously you can't for something like this.
Yeah, so I don't. I mean, I'm not going to make up a character right now that you can put in there. Oh well, you could do like homebrew stuff. You could do like homebrew characters,
like the mages game. Get little mage guys with the cloak. You know the cloak little guys.
Yeah,
get one of them there.
The one that I liked that I played a little bit that I want to see more of is Bat Puncher. I want the character from Bat Puncher. That's it.
How about the little lizard? Remember the lizard NES game we promoted on the NES marathon in the past?
Yeah.
Get the little lizard.
Lizard's cool. That would be cool. But yes, I like the character from Bat Puncher.
I don't think I saw Bat Puncher before. Super Bat Puncher?
Bat Puncher's pretty fun.
Oh, this is adorable.
Yeah, it's great.
And you have a little bird that with you that flies around? Little helper animal?
I don't really. The demo I played did not have a little helper animal that I recall.
Yeah, it was a little bird helper. Little golden bird that flies around. That's adorable.
Yeah, I enjoy it.
So maybe this would be a way to promote the other. You can make it like you get the agreement of the other homebrew developers and you make it like the Smash Brothers for the homebrew. Mm-hmm. That's a great way. Then you get everyone promoting it together. Oh, there's the punching. Okay, you like it because it's rocking. It's like rock and catch.
That's
okay.
A cute little cat.
You get a little punching.
And the bats are cute. Everything about the game is cute and it looks nice.
I don't think I've played this before. I've seen this. Can I buy this? Is it out on the cart?
I don't know if it's all the way out.
I don't have many homebrews. Here. Good old platforming fun, special moves, two-player mode. Explicit bat punching.
Yeah, it says it's just a demo for now, as far as I can tell. At least that's what I played, was just a demo.
Okay. Because Micromage is already out. Okay, this is going to be the second release. Got it. Yeah, Micromage did extremely well. As a Kickstarter.
Was Micro Mages and Super Bat Puncher the same people?
Morph Cat Games, it looks like. Oh, okay. Yes. So you have a good pedigree, obviously. All right, so look out for Super Tilt Bro, and hopefully the Wi-Fi works out. Like, I'm really interested in seeing how that looks. There are early prototypes of game cards exist, so they've made them. So there you go. All right, Ian.
We got a Patreon. You go to patreon.com/CU Podcast. And there you go. There you go with your money and your high hopes. And
high hopes, your dreams.
Your dreams. And you spend that money as fast as you can on your hot little hands.
What?
So what do we offer at our Patreon? I do a writing every week. I don't know what this week's writing is going to be on. Last week I wrote about Spelunky 2, which I have been playing feverishly.
Talk about punching bats.
I could talk about punching bats.
You can talk about the history of the sesame seed bun.
Could talk about the history of the sesame seed bun.
You've already done the research. You're qualified.
You also get access to the full video podcast that goes up on Tuesdays. And you get to vote in I do a hangout.
Once a month, sure.
Once a month. And you get to vote in these Q&As.
And so this was this week's topics in third place, thankfully. What video games would you make a novelization of and why at only 19%? That's a bad one. Second place, 32%. Besides Super Mario 35, what retro games would make good Battle Royale games? That's an interesting one. And then in first place, Ian. Wow, this is a strong first place one. 49%. What are your favorite toy lines and why?
So I have two that I considered to be probably my favorite, even though I only like actively played with one or asked for one. The Voltron line of toys in the 80s was probably my favorite. It's one of the only cartoons I remember being obsessed with in the 80s. That was at least an 80s cartoon. Like, a lot of people remember G.I. Joe or Thundercats and stuff like that. I never really got into a lot of that, but Voltron I was big into. And I had I think they were the Matchbox. They did the die-cast Lions. They were like the Hot Wheels cars or the Matchbox cars, but they were the Lions, and they had the wheels underneath them, so you could run them down... like Hot Wheels toy track.
They weren't Matchbox sizes. I had that set. They were about, it's about a foot tall. That one was, or plastic.
I'm saying they made small metal ones. That's what I'm saying.
But mine, you could wind them back and they went. You said yours, you can do that as well?
No, mine weren't wind back. They were just let them go. No. No, I do remember the wind back ones too.
I had the wind back plastic one. So they had a metal one, they had a plastic one, they had the big 18-inch one, which I have in the garage, a plastic one as well.
And I had one of those. I think I had the 18-inch plastic one. I remember I got it from a garage sale. My mom got it for me. And that was one of my favorite toys of all time.
You still have it?
I have them. I have two full-size Voltrons, but they're not. It's not my original.
You have the big one, the 3¾ figures fit in?
I have the bigger one that Vonnie got me, and then I have the Soul of Chogokin one, the $300 fucking die-cast one. It's insane.
That came out back then?
No, it came out like
four years ago.
It's not based on the new one. That one is fucking nuts.
Gotcha. I had the, not the miniature one that didn't come apart. As a kid, I had the, let's see, I'm looking at it right now. Here's the Matchbox one.
Jesus Christ, that fucking Voltron's expensive now.
Yeah, that's the one I had. The Deluxe Lion set. It was plastic. It wasn't made of metal. Yeah.
Dude, I'm talking about metal cars.
Oh, actual cars?
They Matchbox-sized cars.
I've never seen that as a Voltron before. Sorry. I had the Matchbox released Deluxe Lion set. It was about a foot tall. It goes for $350 in the box. Holy shit. I have it loose. Had it as a kid. Matchbox Voltron 3 Deluxe Lion set. Full size die cast with box and manual. They call it die cast, but I don't know why they call it die cast, but I don't think it was metal. It was plastic.
They made metal ones. They did. It was partially metal, part plastic, but there was definitely metal involved.
Is that one I had then? Because I don't think they made two different ones of that, did they? Anyway, so whatever. I had that size. But I also had, when I started collecting toys in my teenage years, I got the bigger one that put the 3¾ figures in that you actually bought separately.
Right.
That one wasn't as nice as the small one in terms of the ornate stuff.
No, the smaller one was nicer. And maybe I'm thinking of the one you're talking about. Maybe they were pulled back.
But the smaller ones didn't have the enemies that you could buy.
Right.
Only the big 18-inch one had those enemies. Though, and I don't remember those being easy to find in the stores. Then again, I was only like four and five, so I only had the one Voltron, a little guy. But okay, so that was yours. Any other ones? You mentioned the Thundercats.
So the other one for me was just straight up Hot Wheels cars and track. It's crazy because
I love just playing Hot Wheels and Matchbox cars.
I mean, I have no interest in cars these days, but when I was a kid, Hot Wheels track was all I wanted, was more and more of it. And we had the original kind where, like, you had to clamp the starting piece up on something high, and then you would let it run down. You could let it run down the slope and do the loops.
Okay.
Yeah.
I didn't have that.
Playing with the track was my favorite thing. That was, like, whenever my mom would see that stuff at garage sales, she would buy up whatever track
I almost never got a brand new Matchbox or Hot Wheels car. My parents would find, like, a case of them at a garage sale. But what they also found, though, was that I had the... It's so funny. You had, like, the racing thing. I had the town set that you literally had, like, the town... Like,
oh,
the
those
road
were
pieces.
Cool. My younger brother had that.
And, like, yield and street signs and stuff.
Yep.
Like, I had that. And I liked playing with that. It wasn't, like, a lot of houses or something with it, but it was, like, here's the roads, here's the intersection. It had, like, the intersection pieces, you know, and it had the curve pieces. You can make your own little townville setup, farm town setup, Ian. You could do that. With that, so I loved it as a kid. I loved having just giant blocks, you know, the old school giant blocks. They don't make them anymore. The big ones that you can bludgeon someone to death with. I used to make my own little forts with army men. I used to love the little plastic army men. Used to love them. I made my own little like battleships, and I throw things at them to like to destroy them between two different sides. I would do that. But okay, so but really, really, the toy lines I loved. We'll start with Mask. Mask is fantastic. Because Mask is really a combination of Transformers and G.I. Joe. Because they're human still, but they have transforming vehicles. And it's a combo of those. And Mask was nice because they were cheaper for the most part than the bigger Transformers. But I guess I identify better with the humans than the robot characters. And that's probably why I didn't love the Transformers cartoon. But Mask was a great toy line. I had the rocker, I forget his name, with the sunglasses, who had the motorcycle, probably because that was the cheapest one, motorcycle that went into a helicopter. And it was cute. And they were cute. They didn't transform totally, but there was enough. The gun came out. Propellers came up. I love them. He-Man, I liked He-Man a lot as a kid. Because He-Man is so outrageous in the different types of, like, they're all, like, basically aliens. Especially like the villains. No, the humans too. You got the guy with the long neck. You got Moss Man. You got a skunk guy that smells. You know, you got the awful lobster guy. What was it? Awful Clawful with a big lobster arm. You had Manny faces, different faces that twisted around. You had they were bizarre. Like they all had the same torso and legs, and but they were just bizarre in what they did. You had the guy that had the climbing rope. Oh, what was that? Webster, was that his name? It was just fun. You had Beast Man, who was orange. So yeah, He-Man was great. Cartoon sucked though. So there was, to me, it was always either the cartoon was great and the toys did not live up to it, or the toys were good but the cartoon, it was hard to match that. Thundercats got close. Thundercats toys were interesting because I don't know if you had any Thundercats toys.
I think we had like one or two floating around that were just there.
I had a win two of them at Seaside Heights because my parents didn't. I think they bought me like one. They got me like the walrus guy who was like one of the secondary characters, and it didn't get me one of like the main ones. But they were cool because they had the action, the arm action. And they had the little, Lino had the little red glow that went through him when you put the little flashlight.
Oh, yeah.
So that was cool. And then Ninja Turtle figures were really nice because, there was a wide variety of types, and some guys had like, you know, had like a little clear stomach with stuff inside. I forget what guy with that was, a Mutant Gin Man or something. There was like different, animal races. You had like the gecko with a skateboard. You had like the doctor, that Dr. Stockman or whatever, that becomes the
Baxter
fly
Stockman.
Baxter Stockman, who was a doctor. So you had a bunch of those. So Ninja Turtles to me got close. Just like, okay, the cartoon is really good, the toys are really good, the play sets are really good. You had the goo, you know, you fire the goo, you had the slime. It was a good time there. Of course, I come back to the goat, G.I. Joe. Not just because it sold the cartoon sold the toys sold the cartoon together perfectly. And I guess the more adult comic book there. But G.I. Joe is always my goat of the 80s for toys and cartoon. because when you actually saw the cartoon show and the new characters, it made you want to buy the figures of those characters. Like, they really sold the characters well and fleshed them out to buy them. Because there was, remember, I always bring this up, it was amazing. There was like 50 to 60 different G.I. Joes on screen that you saw.
Sure.
They rotated them out. So you see one guy from the early seasons that, you know, because those are early turtle line. They would bring those early guys back in later seasons. You would just see him less. Maybe once every 5 or 6 episodes. Oh, there's Zap. He's one of the first guys. We're going to bring him back to do something in the background. He'll get some lines, though. So it made you want to go, oh, look at this guy. This guy I haven't seen before. Here, Airtight. He's a weird biochemical soldier with a weird quirky personality. I like to joke around. He's not on a lot of episodes. I want to buy him. And he became a figure I always wanted, and I was jealous my friends had. So... And G.I. Joe, you know, talk about all different diverse characters. You know, they had that before any other cartoon had that. They had everyone on there, and it was great. And everyone working together. So I always go back to G.I. Joe because that. And G.I. Joe also had, to me, it had the best vehicles and playsets because the 3 3/4 scale, you can get away with having really, like, sort of minor, more micro toys or gigantic toys or medium toys. So if you couldn't afford the big whale hovercraft, you can get the smaller, like, motorcycle,
right,
or get the little armadillo mini tank, like, that were cheaper. That's why I end up having, I think, a lot more G.I. Joe toys and everything else, because the figures were cheapest. They were $2 and change for a 3 3/4 figures, which were had full articulation and a few different accessories, and I think they had like $10 to $15 vehicles that were still affordable for your middle class family. You didn't go out and buy, you know, the $50, you know, vehicle. They had $10 vehicles, $15 vehicles. Very smart toy line because of that. They had all different degrees of toys. I guess Transformers was the same way. They had the little micro guys and medium and gigantic ones. You know, so yeah, I love G.I. Joe. I ended up having about probably 40 to 50 G.I. Joes when all was said and done. You know, and then I had probably 15 to 20 vehicles at least, maybe 20, 25 vehicles. And I had only one. I had the battle platform, the play set, the one that went into the water or on dry land. I had that one. If you ever saw the cartoons or had any memories of that.
No.
You know, you have a favorite G.I. Joe?
No.
Did you have any toys? Mm-hmm. No G.I. Joes? Really?
No, I didn't care for G.I. Joe when I was a kid.
Really?
Yep.
Could have bonded over...
Didn't care for G.I. Joe. Didn't care
Shipwreck.
For Thundercats.
Really?
Yep.
You like the cartoon even?
Nope.
Anime style you don't like?
Didn't like the He-Man cartoons.
Oh, the cartoons are garbage. The toys are fun. You can't rewatch the He-Man cartoons. You just can't.
I do remember. I liked the toys. I never really had any, but by the time my younger brother was into toys, that's when garage sales were flooded with He-Man figures. Like,
oh, yeah.
Everyone was getting rid of
them.
So my brother had a massive, massive box of He-Man toys. And at one point in time, I mean, I could name just about any He-Man fucking character, and my brother had it. They weren't new, they weren't complete, but, you know, we had them because they were everywhere and they were cheap as hell. So that's what my brother
had. By late 80s, He-Man were like 7 years old. So yeah,
they were just everywhere. Couldn't escape them.
I remember seeing some of the G.I. Joes in the late 80s, but not a lot of them. If I went to the flea markets in the mid 90s, I would have started buying the G.I. Joes again, because I sold all my toys off at yard sales and like my grandparents when I was like, you know, 12, 13 years old. That's why I sold them all. My original batch of NES games I sold when I was like 12, 13 years old.
Yeah,
before I would rebuy them like 4 years later, you know, I sold them all off. But I was such a good kid when it came out. I even like put all the weapons together with each figure before I want to make sure they went to a good home. Put all the weapons together with each figure. I sold them each, whatever it was, $1, $2 each, whatever I sold, $1 each, 50 cents. When I was like 13 years old, 12 years old. Now I'm kind of sad because I didn't get some of those G.I. Joes back. I have a bunch in my garage that I rebought. I have a lot more than I had when I was a kid now, and ones that are worth money. G.I. Joes have, in the past two, three years, have skyrocketed in price versus what they used to be. And I don't know why it took so long versus other toy lines, but all of a sudden now, like, even like a beat up like Storm Shadow is like $50. You know, it's just I don't know what happened. I guess everyone reached the age of 40 and wanted to get nostalgic for G.I. Joe. Why didn't you do it the past 10 years? Because they put out garbage products or no products of G.I. Joe.
Right.
So, well, thanks for the question there.
All right. Well, that's the end.
This is the end of the podcast. Only an hour and a half. Was there supposed to be every week? Then our intros became 40 minutes, 50 minutes long.
Yes.
Which is fine. They're fun.
This week's intro is a lot more reasonable.
It was like 32 minutes and change. Well, support us on, you can join on YouTube. If you're listening, you hit that join button next to subscribe, or on Patreon, patreon.com/podcast. I'm going to try to do a Flea Market Madness this month. I was thinking of an NES Punk video idea I might do this month. If not, I'll have it for November, but we'll see. Something simple, but I gotta work on all these different things once. I'm past juggling stuff. He's juggling stuff here. So I got to go kill some flies, Ian. That fly survived. I saw him buzzing around. I'm going to finish the job. They're tough.
They're tough.
Exoskeleton.
No, they're brutally tough. It's like getting hit by a truck and surviving.
I mean, seriously, per scale?
Yes.
This thing hurts me when I fire, and firing it almost point blank, I was like 3 inches away. That's like getting hit with a cannon.
Just moved him. All right. We're out.
Bye.